You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 34. Of the Rex Chapman Show with super cool, my super dope homeboy from the L-Town, Josh Hopkins.
I like that introduction. You did L-Town last time.
Yeah, I'm going to keep doing it. That's my thing now. That's your thing now. All just right, get used to it. All right.
Yeah. I want cat calls in the street like, hey, yeah. L-Town.
Hey. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sell t-shirts.
That's my, here's Johnny. Yeah. Right?
Super dope homeboy from the L Town.
That's so cool.
Right?
Yeah.
I could only speak.
I'll come up with something for you. Like, this is my friend Rex, who's also, he's awesome, cool. Is that, that doesn't flow.
I love it. I like your flow.
All right. Thank you. Thank you.
Bars.
What? Bars. What's up, man?
Nothing, man. Episode 34. It's the friend of the show, Shaquille O'Neal episode. Not Shaquille, but he wore 34. Who else wore 34?
You wore a lot of numbers, but I go straight to sweetness.
Walter Payton.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, it's my growing up 34.
Yeah. Also, I go to Charles Barkley College. Yeah. That Auburn 34 jersey just sort of stands out to me. I know you're not much of a War Eagle, but I'm an aficionado, but I'm an expert of some kind on the whole War Eagle Tiger thing.
You're not. I'm not. I went there, but
I know, but you didn't really. You just kind of went to sporting events and stuff. You weren't cracking the books like
right,
this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of that, real quick, the book club. People that don't know, we talk about books and stuff we've read that we think you guys as an audience might enjoy if we do. Rex, did you get to anything this week?
Interesting. You should say this. Okay. I just got sent a book this week. I've had it for a week. It's a friend of the show, Seth Davis's book, The Wooden Book. The Wooden Book.
Yeah.
So I've had that this week, but hadn't gotten around to checking it out. So
yeah, I think we call those paperweights.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, I've got a couple of the paperweights holding this computer up.
Yeah, I got some paperweights over here myself.
Have you read anything this week?
No. So that's been book club. A lot of the goings. Oh, hold on real quick. I want to mention a Kentucky 34. Your boy.
My guy.
Yeah.
Kenny Skywalker.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, legal name. It's his legal name. He was born Kenny Walker, born Kenneth Walker, given no middle name. About early 90s, I went down to the courthouse with him. He had to go through this whole paperwork thing, legally change his name to Kenny Skywalker, SKY.
That is awesome.
It is awesome, right?
It's going to be hard to top that in the pod. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
How did I not know that?
Kenny's the best. The best.
We have him on here. You can say Kenny Skywalker because it's really, okay.
It's sweet. Really your legal name.
What's going on in the NBA league this year, Rex?
A lot of goings on. We've made it to the All-Star break. Exciting that the best team in the league is the Phoenix Suns. I think they are scaring a lot of the teams right now because they're playing pretty well. But long way to go. I'm excited for Monty Williams and his staff to coach in the All-Star game. Yeah. That'll be fantastic. You know, the trades that were made last week, we still haven't seen Ben Simmons play for the Nets, still haven't seen James Harden play for the Sixers. Also, we got to touch this with our guest today, touch on this, but I watched a basketball game here in New York the other night between the New York Knickerbockers and the Brooklyn Nets. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the worst beats you've ever seen by a home team. And in this market up here, the Knicks, fully healthy, at home, in the Garden, up 28. And they lost to the Nets, no KD, no Ben Simmons, no Kyrie. What? I mean, seriously, think about that. It's like, it would be like us losing, Kentucky losing a 28-point lead at home to Louisville.
Without any of Louisville starters.
Right. Yeah. Come on. Oh, boy. I feel bad for Tibbs and their staff. It just looks sour right now, but hopefully they'll get it. I love Tom Thibodeau. He's a hell of a basketball coach. Kenny Payne on the staff there. I know they're going through their stuff right now, though. Anyway.
Yeah. That's a tough one. They were talking about all in the media because, I mean, that's, you know, Knicks aren't very good, but better than they've been.
And the expectations got them, though, last year. Because, you know, Knicks fans are – they're fans. And they saw progress. I think they've been as they should have. They want to see another step. But they definitely haven't taken that step. And looks like right now they've taken a step back or so. So it's going to be interesting to see the second half, see how, Miami's good. Milwaukee's good. Sixers are going to be good with, you know, the addition of James. They're just going to be different. Anxious
Lakers
to see
are terrible.
How the Lakers, Anthony Davis, our boy, got hurt again. And did you see that? It? Yes, I saw it. And, you know, I've done that is called a foot sprain when it goes over the top like that. And that is, to me, that's much more difficult to recover from than the regular old ankle sprain that rolls over the traditional way, which is also terrible. Mm-hmm. But the top of your foot swells as well as your ankle. And it just can, I'd be shocked if he's back playing effectively in a month. I mean, it's going to take some time.
No, I saw, I'm a bad ankle physiological guy. And the bad ankle guys, the guys that play in running shoes and turn it and run it off.
Yeah.
And turn it and I'm in a cast. Like I've torn every ligament on both ankles 3 or 4 times. Once I had to play in ankle braces and it felt like a robot, you know? So when I saw that go all the way over like that, I shouldn't have watched. I was like, did it go? How'd he do it? And then, I got sick. The only thing, because it went all the way and made me sick, but the only thing I saw that could have been worse is if it went all the way over like that and his toe was pointed more. It went like that, but when it's like that, anyway, enough of that, but Lakers are done.
Yeah, I think, it's going to be tough. LeBron's, nobody wants to play. You don't ever, whether he's the 8 seed or the 2 seed or the 1 seed, you don't want to play arguably the greatest player ever. I said arguably because people can make that argument. And he's, one of the top 2 or 3 ever. You don't want to play that man, no matter who he has beside him, because he's going to get calls. And he's killing it. I mean, he looks like he's, 20, man, I don't want to exaggerate, 30.
If the Lakers were doing well, he'd be really MVP. He'd be right there with whoever's MVP candidates now.
Yes. Yeah. He's the only reason that they're even in any sort of contention in the playoffs right now. I'm not trying to take away from anybody else. Our guy Malik's having a terrific year and they've got guys playing, but hey, when your best player, Anthony is supposed to be their best player right now. And when he's not, and then you got Russell, who's also, he's trying to find his way.
Bad fit.
Yeah.
Who do you think is MVP here at the halfway point?
Man, that's hard. Part of me wants to say DeMar DeRozan because he's never been in the conversation before, and what he's doing right now is just phenomenal. Over 35 or 37 a game, above 50% shooting in seven or eight straight. That's insane. I think nobody's ever done that before, like zero bodies.
Right.
So he's having a great year. They're having a terrific year. I think Chris Paul has to be in the conversation. I mean, with what the Phoenix Suns are doing, he's never really been in the conversation. Of course, Stephen. Of course, Giannis. Of course, Joel Embiid.
And
KD. KD's just missed. He's missed a lot of games. But yeah, Joel. I got to give it to him. That dude took a lot of shit his first few years from guys like Shaq and guys like Charles to, be more, go down, play in the post, impose your will, just beat people up. And to his credit, he took that. Took that, and he's doing work now. He's gotten himself in shape. He plays every single night. I mean, so you can't throw him out or Giannis.
It's one of those things. I see Joel now playing, and I'm like, I have to watch because this is him at a height of his powers.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been hurt a lot, and he been prone to being injured, right? This is one of the best health spans he's had. He's in shape. And this is him. This is a year you would say, you want to see what a great big man, you'd say this year. You know, he's as athletic as he'll ever be. He's not on the downside.
Yeah.
And the things he's doing, what a freak athlete. High spin moves and shooting and pull-ups and step-backs.
He's bringing the ball up the floor.
Crazy.
It's just, a lot of us want him to be Shaq-like, but Shaq didn't do that. I mean, Shaq could get it on occasion and go coast to coast and do it. I mean, the guy brings it up the floor with pace, and he can get you into your offense. And then, to talk about his maturity, he just went in. Philly just went into Milwaukee a night or two ago, and he destroyed them. Got a win on the road against the defending champs. Got 40-some. You're feeling pretty good about yourself going into the break when you've done that.
Yeah. If he can stay healthy, it's fun to watch. What was the center that came out of Ohio State? Greg
Oden.
Greg Oden. Right now, you look at Zion, and there's two paths.
Yeah.
And hopefully he gets it in and gets in shape and goes the Embiid way.
Yeah.
There's a Greg Oden path. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens with that kid.
I'm glad you brought that up because, and look at all three of those guys. All three of them were extraordinarily big at a young age, probably got to college, still growing some, Joel for sure. Mm-hmm. Zion, a huge human being as a young person. Mm-hmm. Then they start maturing, and you've got to imagine that these are gigantic human beings, and they're performing a job running up and down a court on spindly little ankles. And come on. I think that there are some growing things that go on. Tyler Hero missed almost a whole thing. He's still growing when he got to the league. He missed, a ton of time last year. I think some of it is growing stuff. The thing with Zion, I think we talked about it recently, over Zion's first 2 years, he's played like the same number of games Joel did.
Right.
And Embiid did in his first 2 years. So you just hope that he can get physically healthy. Obviously, something's wrong with his foot. You're not talking about another foot surgery if it's not. So,
but Joel, wasn't his mostly foot?
I think
just a huge human being with that kind of torque and power. I mean, it seems like the foot is the place that's like, can't you know, rather than ankles or
yeah,
foot can't take it.
It's got nowhere else to go. You know, it's going to break your foot down. You got to have metal put in there. We think about our guy, Sam Bowie. Sam broke his shin time and time again.
Yeah.
You know, metal and screws and all that.
His was the worst. He breaks that. He's out all that time. And then he breaks the other one the same way where you realize then it wasn't just a freak accident. It's physiology. It's biometrics. Your body can't take your explosion and movement with that big of a body.
Yeah. Human body's just not meant to do it for that long, you know, at that rate, but awfully fortunate. I hope Zion can get healthy. You know, Josh, we ought to get to our guest. Want to do that?
I'd love to.
We have today, he's an NBA analyst for ESPN and SiriusXM NBA Radio. Also, former NBA three-point champ and the number 7 most accurate three-point shooter in NBA history. I'm a shooter. We have a maker on the show. We have Timothy Eugene Legler. What's up, Tim?
What up, man? Hey, listen, it's a high percentage I shot, but you know what? When you could jump like you, man, you could get above the rim, and you had some easier finishes than I did. So I couldn't jump like that, so I had to learn how to shoot it a little bit better. That's all.
You could shoot it plenty, man.
But Rex was saying, too, he was saying before we got on here, he was like, Legler, he had a shooter, but he was athletic. You were, people think of you should, but you could go.
You know, listen, the truth is this, we all know this. Like, basically, if you're a white guard, you're never going to get credit for being an athlete. It's just the way it is. So I always considered myself a good athlete. I was strong. I was always in great shape. I could run. You know, I wasn't a guy that played above the rim very much, but I was, you know, more athletic than you're given credit for. So I think what happens is that when you get to the NBA, you understand you're going to be put into a specific role and you're going to do that great. And you're going to accept the fact that people are going to assume you can't do certain things. The truth is everybody gets to that level, did everything as a college player. Then you get to the pros and the only guys that do that are the stars. Everybody else better find one thing that you do great, better than everybody else in the world. So that's kind of the truth. Yeah, I always felt I was a good athlete, but you just never really get a lot of credit for that.
The Rex Chapman Show is sponsored by Ticket Smarter. Ticket Smarter helps customers from all walks of life experience the power and excitement of live events by giving back through children's charities and creating helpful partnerships. $1 from every transaction will help our charitable partners, including St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital, the V Foundation, Quarterback and Children's Health Foundation, and Coach to Cure MD. Ticket Smarter is the official ticket resale partner of PBR, NJCAA, and over 35 collegiate conferences with 250 plus universities, including the Pac-12. While I'm here in Brooklyn, I could catch a Nets game or any of the concerts coming to the Barclays Center. Buying with Ticket Smarter is quick, easy, and 100% guaranteed tickets. Find tickets to more than 125,000 concerts, sports, and theater events. Order now.
Well, you certainly were. Growing up, as a little kid, was your plan to be a baseball player? You grew up playing Little League for your dad, and I know baseball is a passion of yours.
100%, man. My dad was a baseball coach for 30 years. He coached my brother all the way through. He got a hold of me at a young age, 7, 8. That's all I knew really was baseball. And that my dream from about 8, 9, 10 years old was I'm playing in the major leagues. There was no question in my mind. And when we moved from Baltimore to Richmond when I was 12, we specifically chose an area to live because we went to the team, Tucker High School in Richmond, Virginia, that was basically – the Boston Celtics of the 60s, as it was high school baseball in the 80s. They won a state championship every year. We specifically targeted that area so I could go play in that program. And we won 2 state championships in 4 years. And so that was my thing. And basketball really didn't come around until I was like 14 because I hit a huge growth spurt. And I decided, you know what? I'm going to give it a shot. And, man, by the end of my freshman year, I pretty much was addicted to
really
because the thing I loved about it was you didn't need anybody else to get better. You know, baseball, you know, somebody's going to have to hit your ground balls. You're going to have to go out there, get somebody to shag them for you. You're going to need to get to a batting cage. You know, basketball, it was, you know, a hoop, sneakers, and a ball. I don't need a single soul. I can be out here as long as I want to. And I had a very obsessive work ethic. So once I discovered that, honestly, that's really why I fell in love with the game. It was funny because my baseball coach, we'd be at baseball practice. You know, this is the best team in the state of Virginia, and I'm there playing. And we'd finish practice, and I would keep my uniform, baseball uniform on. I would switch from cleats to sneakers, and I would go up, and we had this huge outdoor basketball complex not far from the high school, and I'd go right down there in my baseball uniform, and I'd play pickup ball until 10 o'clock at night. That's and my great. Baseball coach used to hate it. Oh, he used to yell, Linger, he had a southern accent, Linger, get off that damn basketball court. We got regionals this week. You know, he'd be screaming at me, man. He'd literally come to the courts and heckle me to get off the court. But I had that bug, man. I got addicted to the game, and that was that.
You should have just worn your baseball uniform everywhere. Just wore it. You can go bowling. You've got it. You're at dinner.
That's great, man.
Change your shoes.
Wait, once I got one of those state championship jackets, I definitely wore that thing everywhere.
I'm sure. Did you, before you hit the growth spurt, you played basketball, right?
Yes.
You had played. So, yep. But were you a sniper before you hit the growth spurt?
Oh, no, not at all.
It came later?
Yeah, the one thing I will say, because I didn't really play, other than like literally at like recess at school, mm-hmm. right? I mean, occasionally I'd get in a little pickup game in the neighborhood, a driveway a little bit. Until I was like 14, I never really started to take it seriously. So I had not really shot a basketball or learned how to at a young age. So by the time I started to shoot and get reps in, I was copying my favorite players in the NBA. So I had no bad habits. You know, I was big enough and strong enough that the first time I really got serious, you know, I had the ball here. I wasn't bringing it from my waist. Yeah, I wasn't doing all of that stuff. So I really think in a way it kind of helped me because I was able to develop a mechanics early. And I had a great high school coach that literally, man, he passed away over the course of the last 2 years during COVID.
He
passed away, literally a second father to me. He was the guy that when he found out he had this player in his program that was obsessive about getting better, he was the guy, you know, literally going there, meeting me at the gym 9-10 o'clock at night, rebounding me for 2 hours, working and perfecting my mechanics. So really, I think it happened over the course of probably summer after ninth grade into probably by the end of 10th grade. That whole year is when I really developed into a real shooter. Wow. And then it was a matter of, you know, extending range and working on the rest of my game, my handle and all of those things.
Well, you had to be, you hadn't practiced it, but besides being an obsessive worker, I mean, your hand eye, that's a gift from God. And you had that and then you perfected it. Since you loved baseball, like what position did you play? I bet you could really hit.
I was a shortstop and a relief pitcher. I could throw the ball in the high 80s, low 90s in high school. So I was like,
wow.
But that's all I threw. So I had like three pitches, you know, faster and fall down fast. So that's really all I had. So I would come in American Legion ball in high school. That's pretty much all I did. But I was a shortstop. Ironically, what happened was I was a shortstop my entire life. And going into my junior year of high school, we had an issue with the third baseman, was having a hard time, and he was having a hard time with his throws to first. So they literally made this shift. They put him second base. They slid the second baseman over to short, and I moved over to third for my last 2 years of high school. And, man, did I love playing third base. I played up in the grass. I had like lightning quick reflexes. So, I mean, I just loved how quick the ball got on me from there. So that's what I played. And I think pitching and throwing out a target was something I had a knack for early. I agree with what you said. I've changed my thinking on it over the years about teaching shooting. And I do a lot of it with my camps and all the teams I've coached in AAU and individual training I've done. I do think there's a certain element you have to be born with.
Yeah.
Depth perception and the ability to adjust on distances. Because I've worked with kids that I got their mechanics to the point where literally it looked like mine and the damn ball never went in because they didn't have that innate sense for distance, you know, and they just couldn't ever get their body no matter how much they practice. So I do agree. I think there's a large part of that is innate understanding of hand eye and depth perception and that kind of stuff that you really have a hard time teaching.
Yeah, but that's like it's neglected when we talk about athleticism. And that is, you know, the hand eye is as important as anything, but we always think about explosive leapers and whatnot.
Right.
But that is athleticism. That, you know, you can't in the same, okay, you can teach someone how to jump, but, you know, like try this and do leg, but they ain't going to beat Zion.
Touch is a whole different thing. I mean, we see it all the time. Touch is something you have or you really don't have. You can get better.
It's funny how it actually then correlates to some of the stuff you do in real life. Like I'm a sniper on a beer pong table. I'll tell you right now, I'm a hell of a bag old player. Like I'm a good cornhole player. Yeah. I can throw darts. Like I do think there's a correlation between taking an object and hitting another object and, you know, the distance and touch. And especially if you've never done it, like you'll see somebody that's a natural, that's never done something, try it, how quickly they figure it out because their body just has a way. And I do think you're right. It's a part of the game that should be, you know, listed as an athletic trait, but it typically isn't. We think run, jump, start, stop, accelerate, that being athletic ability. But I think that's a huge component too.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic.
It's a real, just to piggyback on that, because I like to ask people that are elite in that regard. We've had a lot of great shooters on here. And I like to ask, was there a time growing up when you were like, you know, like, mom, how come I never lost at darts? Mom, how come I'm the best at what's going on? Was there a time where you're like, I just really good at everything?
I think that probably I think because of my success with baseball at an early age, I was always playing from the time I was literally 6-7 years old. I was always playing with kids 2 and 3 years older than me. Yeah. Like I was 7 years old playing in a 10-year-old little league, you know? And I think you start to realize at that time, like you got a knack for it. It comes pretty naturally to you. Baseball was so natural to me because, I mean, my father, because he was a coach, you know, I just remember him, you know, 3 years old. We're out there and he's teaching me all the fundamentals of the game and properly how to field a ground ball and how to swing a bat and shift your weight and rotate your hips and all the little details that, you know, you now I passed on to like my children and kids that I coach. It's when you get them when they're young, man, does it matter? And so baseball for me, by the time I was that age, it had already developed that. Basketball was it. When I first started playing, you know, I didn't have a lot of success shooting it. It wasn't going in a lot, but I was obsessed with figuring out how to make that happen. Yeah. And then, like I said, I always tell people when I give a lot of talks on shooting and stuff, and I say, I would challenge anybody this. Find anywhere that you can that shot more shots than I shot from age of 14 until probably, you know, through college once I got into and became a pro. I just don't know anybody that lived in a gym the way I did in high school. Certainly nobody in my area or none of the guys I played with, you know. So,
I believe and for you to say that because I don't think we really knew how well analytics hadn't become a real bit. Look, I was considered a 3-point shooter. I struggled to make 35%. You shot 40% at a time, man, when that was elite. And it still is, you know, and to your point about, you know, learning when you're little, I remember going and watching my dad's coach high school basketball and, you know, by the time I was 5, I could dribble behind my back.
Right.
And so, you know, when you grow up, it's easier to learn it when you don't think you're learning something.
Absolutely.
And then it translates later. I grew up in a small town in Kentucky, a rural part of the country. But I think you're a couple years ahead of me in high school. But I went to five star going into my senior year at Robert Morris College.
Yeah.
And we had a great week, but I left five star and I'd been seen by Howard Garfinkel. And from that point on, I was, an All-American. I was going to, but five star did that because 100%. I went there and I'd been doing what I did at home. I dominated there but that kind of showed me that, okay, these are the best out here and I can hold my own with them. And I understand you went to five star as well, right?
I did. And it's funny you said that because that for me was really a life-changing event to go there because I was at a school in Richmond, Virginia. That time Richmond was not a highly recruited area. It is now. It wasn't then. And like our team, I didn't have another guy on my team that really cared that much about it. Right. And it used to drive me insane. Yeah, I almost got into a few fights in practice because it just didn't matter as much to them. And it was everything to me. And it was hard for them to relate to me because of that. Right. So here we are, we're basically, a 500 type program in Richmond. It's not recruited. And at that time, Rex, the difference between today's player and then to get to five star, you had to already be something as a high school player. Right. Mm-hmm. And now you get to go to five star. Whereas now, I mean, you got an AAU team, every six square miles in the country.
You can be seen.
You go to tournaments on a weekend. You play five games. You got 100 coaches in the gym. It was different then. So you had to get to five star. And that was my goal. And I went up there. Same thing. Went up there. And, remember, they had the waiters. So, you had the top 20 players in the camp where the guys at the mess hall were literally waiting on the table. But it was such a status thing. You're watching these guys walk around, man. You're reading Street and Smith's, right? And you're going, damn, like these are the guys you're reading about. And then you get on the court, and I'll never forget that week playing against a Jeff Lebo, okay?
Yeah.
Who was playing at Carlisle, PA with Billy
Owens. That's right.
He was a legend. I mean, this guy was mythical.
We played together for Team USA, Jeff and I.
Oh, there you go.
Love him.
He was a mythical high school figure, right? In fact, at the five-star camp, I'll never forget this. Mike Fratello gave a shooting demonstration, and he goes, Jeff, where's Jeff Lebo at? Calls this kid up, and I'm going, wow, man. They called this dude out. He goes up there. So now I'm playing against Jeff that week, and I'm kind of going, all right.
And you were bigger. You were probably bigger, right?
I was bigger. I was definitely stronger. And he was at Carolina.
Jeff was strong, man.
Jeff scored, if I recall, and this might be one of those things that's urban legend, but the way I understood it, he broke his right wrist going into the state championship playoffs his senior year and scored 40-something points based on his left hand. I mean, this is the guy that now I'm here, right? And here he is in front of me. Now, fast forward, junior year at LaSalle, we play Carolina. They come into the Palestra in Philly. They got Kenny Smith, J.R. Reed, Jeff Lebo, Dave Popson, Joe Wolf.
A squad.
They had like 7-8 guys end up playing in the NBA. We play them at the Palestra. And I think I had 27 points in that game. Jeff had probably like 10. And I remember after the game, John Nash, who was general manager for the Sixers, was a comment in the Philadelphia Daily News. He basically said, if you took Tim Legler and swapped him with Jeff Lebo and put Tim Legler in North Carolina and put Jeff Lebo in South, nobody would know the difference because like Legler's like that good of a player. So, and that started with me playing against him at five star. Billy King was there. I remember guarding me one game. Billy King ended up being the defensive player of the year.
Yeah.
And now he's guarding me and I'm having some success. And so these guys that were so built up, you read about him and heard about him, and now here they are in front of you. It was validation that I can do this. I can play at that level. And I swear that week legitimately changed my life because I came home for that. You thought I was obsessive before that, you should have seen it when I got home from five star. That's when I first, for the first time, started thinking about playing in the NBA.
Wow. Amazing. You never really heard of LaSalle before you were recruited by, was it Left Irvin?
Lefty Irvin.
And his staff reached out. What was it about seeing their games at the Palestra made you want to go to school there?
Yeah, I'd never stepped foot in Philly. My visits were I went to University of Virginia on a visit. I went to Richmond. I went to Virginia Tech. I went to Princeton.
UVA was my dream. Virginia was my dream school growing up because.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because my dad coached Jeff Jones, who was Ralph's point guard.
Sure, right, yeah.
At Apollo. And then, so like if they would have recruited me early, I'd have, yes, I'm going. But then I realized also it's pretty tough academic school.
Yeah. That's true. You know, my circumstances were unusual because I skipped second grade. Okay, so
Josh, I told you he was going to make us feel shitty about ourselves. Mm-hmm. Wharton Business School, Academic All American.
It's the worst thing my parents ever did.
Skipped grades.
Yeah, I know. That's kind of a theme here, Tim. Yeah. We feel like shit after every pod because we're losers and you're a winner.
No, it's listen, can you imagine? Now, like, all right, so and we'll get to this in a second, too. I've had interesting life circumstances with, you know, I have a 26-year-old daughter. My son will turn 23 in a few weeks. And I got a 12-week-old son.
Oh, okay. Hey.
So I got another one coming through the pipeline. My son, I joke with other people all the time, like my son that I just had, he's not going to kindergarten until he's 13.
Right? Right.
Because that's the way it works now. He's going to be 13 years old in kindergarten. I'm going to hold him back in eighth grade. He's going to prep school, and then he's going to redshirt. So he's going to be 27-year-old freshman. And he's going to be doing his thing because my parents, like, so I skipped second grade. As a result, I was a young 17 graduating high school. So Virginia offered me, and just like Virginia Tech and I think Ohio State, and they were the main three schools. And you know what they all said? We're going to offer you, but you 100% have to redshirt your freshman year to pick up that year. Now, Rex.
Yeah.
Knowing what I know now, that's the easiest decision. Absolutely. But telling that to somebody, you say, wait a second, I got to sit out a year?
Yeah.
Like, no chance. So
right.
I went to LaSalle on the visit, and really, you know, what turned me was I loved the coaching staff, and I connected with them, and my dad really became best friends with their staff. But more than anything, it was the Palestra. It was a doubleheader. It was 10,000 people sitting on top of you. It was Nova LaSalle, again, and then it was Temple St. Joe's doubleheader. And that year, the next year, Nova won the national championship. All four teams were ranked in the top 25 when I was a freshman. So this is the level of basketball we're talking about. And all these schools are within 10 miles of each other. And I'm like halfway through the game, I turned to my parents and I said, this is exactly the environment I want to play in. So by the time that was over with, I was ready to commit. And obviously, look, those other campuses blew you away. And the athletic budgets and where the guys lived and ate. LaSalle didn't have any of that stuff. What they had was a really rich basketball tradition. It was a great business school, which I was interested in. It was a Catholic school, which was important to my parents. Add it all up, sign me up. So I got to play one of the greatest basketball environments in the country for 4 years at the Palestra.
Wow. Did you think about playing baseball also?
Actually, it's funny you say that. I forgot to mention that. So there was only a handful of schools that would let me play both sports. LaSalle was one of them. In fact, Lefty Irvin, the guy that recruited me, played both sports at LaSalle. So he understood it. So here I was. I was ready to go. Finished my freshman year in basketball. I had a very good year. The last game of the season in the conference tournament, I got a stress fracture in my foot. So I was out for the spring. I went home that summer to Richmond. I played American Legion baseball because I was so young. I had one more year of Legion ball in me. And the funny part, that was the best I ever played in my life because I finally had a year of weight training under my belt at college. So the ball was just jumping off my back. Yeah. So I was excited to get back there. Something happened by the time I got up there in the fall that year with basketball was coming along so well. I just decided, man, I said, I got to commit to one.
Yeah.
And I just loved it more. I just always loved practice more than I did baseball practice. And my dad was heartbroken because he didn't know much about basketball. He really didn't. And he was heartbroken. And he's so funny. So I retired from the NBA at 33 after having some knee injuries. My dad was like, you know, still know some scouts. Could call some people up, you know. I'm like, that's what he believed. Like, he was like, no, you can, it's not too late. You can pull the Tim Tebow thing. And I'm like, come on. So I was like, no, but so it was heartbreaking to him. But I chased my dreams, and it was a different path than a lot of guys, certainly than a guy of your stature coming out. I had to go undrafted, Europe, CBA, 10-day contracts, you know, a lot of heartache, and then finally got a huge break in Dallas picking me up in midseason. And the best thing they did was change everything for me was they said, we're not very good. We need shooting. We're not considering you here on a 10-day contract. You're going to play here the rest of the year, and we're going to let you play through mistakes. I never forget. Brad Davis was the and Gar Hurd were the interim coaches. They fired Richie Adubato, and they said their exact term was, it's sink or swim time. We need to find out if you're an NBA player because we know you shoot it at that level. And I'm telling you, man, to go out there and know you could miss shots and not get yanked. You know, you could get beat on defense without coming out of the game. You know, you didn't have to be super cautious with your passing because you're afraid of turning the ball over, to just play. And it's amazing, man. I shed all the baggage that was on my back. I put so much pressure on myself, and man, the game became easy, and I proved I could play, and I spent the next, 10 years in the league.
Let me ask you, that's so interesting. So you came out undrafted, you go to Europe for a couple of years, you play in the CBA, you led it in scoring. Did you become markedly better those 3 years, and then you hooked on to the NBA and had a great career, or did it just those 3 years is what you needed to go to find the opportunity? Was it you got better, or did it you had to go that route until you finally found your way in?
It's a tremendous question. It's obviously, I would say a combination of both, right? So certainly you improved during that time. But for me, if I put a percentage on those two categories, was it opportunity and someone believing in me or my improvement? I would say 20% of that was improving as a player, primarily in my range and my handle. Mm-hmm. And 80% of it was just being free. Yeah. When you try to play and you have all the pressure in the world you're putting on yourself to play perfectly because you're going on a 10-day or you're in training camp and you know you're battling out for the last spot or you got to beat somebody out that's got a guaranteed contract. Or now you're actually on a roster in a 10-day and you get thrown into a game and you're like, wait, I'm a shooter, got to make every shot. This is literally the mentality. You can't play basketball that way. And that's where I was. And then when those guys said that to me in that hotel room, I'll never forget it. And I walked out of the room. I went down to my hotel room, getting ready to go to the game at night to play my first game for the Dallas Mavericks. I have never felt more liberated. I was like literally unleashed.
As you're saying it, I can feel it. I can feel it for you. You know, people don't understand confidence. They don't understand don't understand confidence. You know, Stephen Curry, best shooter in the world, best shooter we've ever seen. He'll go through a three game period and go, 2 for 19, and he's just lost his confidence for a few days. It's so fragile. But I, to your point, I played on some bad teams as a young player, and that was the reason I was getting minutes. I was able to play through my mistakes. We were going to get beat anyway. Me, Del Curry, Muggsy Bogues, we were getting our heads bashed in every single night. And it's awfully hard to have offensive confidence when you're getting your ass busted on the other end, and you're probably going to come out if the guy scores again, right?
Yeah, 100%. Or you commit, two fouls, you're coming out. Or you get beat baseline one time by some, elite level athlete, by the way.
Drexler.
And he dunks going right. Like Drexler crossed me up and dunks on me right on the baseline. And now you're coming out and you're going, well, wait a second. He just dunked on the other dude that was playing for me twice, but the margin for error is so small when you're in that category. So, so that happened in Dallas. Then I went to Golden State, but honestly, what really changed, I'm a free agent after that year in Golden State and Washington, two Philly guys knowing me so well from playing there, Jimmy Lynam, was the head
coach.
Those
are my guys, Jimmy and John Nash.
And John Nash, right?
Yeah.
And they're Philly guys, so they're very familiar with me, and they knew that, hey, okay, so I shot 52% from the three that year in Golden State. And they're
52.
And they needed 52%. Shooting. So I went to meet with them that summer, came in, and here's what really changed. I'm in training camp, and Jimmy was like, you know, knew I could shoot, and I was shooting the ball well and everything. So that was obvious to them, because this guy's got a role in our team. And man, did we have a front line. And we had Chris Webber, Rasheed Wallace, Juwan Howard, Ben Wallace, and George Marison on the same team. That was our front line. So they needed shooting, especially Webber, as many double teams as he got. But midway through camp, Jimmy Lynam came up to me at practice, and he put his arm around me, and he said, let's take a walk. We start walking, and he said, you know, I knew you were a shooter. You're a hell of a lot more than that. He goes, you win games with guys like you on the court. He goes, you can do everything well. You guard well. You pass well. You make great decisions. You shoot it. You're competitive as hell. You know, he's like, you're going to have a bigger role here than we thought going in. And as it turned out, I mean, I played off the bench. I played about 24 minutes a game that year. I was always on the floor closing out fourth quarters. And it was my breakthrough year. That's the year I led the league in three-point shooting and won the three-point shoot. And his confidence in me and having that conversation with me, Rex, and this is what we were just talking about. Isn't it amazing, the psychology of the sport? Because everybody is so close talent-wise. Some guys, you know, become household names. Other guys struggle. Why? Yep. A lot of it, opportunity, and having that guy that matters believe in you. And man, and then unfortunately, at the end of that year, I was 29 years old, on top of the world, and I shredded my knee in game 81 that season. So I was one game away from going home for the summer. We just got eliminated from the postseason the night before. We won like 7 straight games late. So now we're like a game out of the 8th spot. We get beat the night before. We're eliminated. We're playing the Celtics at home. My daughter was just born, my first child. Like, I'm on top of the world, man.
You
like
just won the three-point contest.
The battle that I fought to get there and feel that good. And now I'm almost to the summer and going to be a free agent and three ligaments at the same time. And I played 4 more years. I never came close to feeling right. And I retired at 33 years old when I should have had 10 years from that point of playing and shooting the basketball at a high level for somebody. And I was done by 33. And so it was, the rug got pulled out at the end of that journey, but damn, thank God I got to that point because of how much I put into it.
Man,
for someone that obsesses so much like that and play, you know, and your hobby is working and going and doing that, how tough was it for you to, your body's injured and you can't go out there and do that
brutal
stuff?
And then when I came back, so they told me it was 12 to 15 months because I tore 3 ligaments. And that was in April. So I'm thinking all next year's out for sure. And I'm a free agent. Now, Washington signed me to a 4-year deal. So, or a 3-year contract. So they believed in me even while I was hurt that I could get back to that level. Okay. So that was good. I got some financial security.
Yeah.
Now I could, but here's the thing, I regret this. I pushed myself so hard in physical therapy because, you know, a guy like me, all I ever thought was somebody's taking my job.
Yeah.
So now here I am, it's February the following year. So you're talking 10 months later. They told me 12 to 15. I took the court again for the first time right after the All-Star break. I actually defended my 3-point title with a knee brace on just cleared to play that weekend. That's I had not played the game yet. And in fact, the organization was talking to me and they're like, well, you know, should you go when you haven't played yet? And I said, well, listen, I got cleared and it's just shooting jump shots. I mean, you know, so they let me go and I got to the finals. I lost to Kerr in the finals that second year. I come back first 2-3 games, man. I feel great. I'm playing great. I got this heavy knit brace on though. And I'm boxing out on a free throw in New Jersey. I think it was my third game. And the ball kicks off the rim and it goes toward the corner. And I go over there. And you know how you kind of shield everybody, let it go out because it's going to be our ball. Mm-hmm. And Jason Williams, the net Jason Williams, not the point guard, the big guy, dives to try to save it and dives dead on the back of my knee. And I go down. I felt something crunch, had all kinds of stuff break loose. And I end up missing the rest of the year. So I had about, 25, 30 games to go to get my feet wet, which would have set me up for the next season.
For the next year.
I'm out for the year. Come back the following camp, and I'm feeling great. I mean, camp, we got a new coach, Bernie Bickerstaff's now our coach. First day of training camp, first two practices, I might have been the best player in the gym. I felt so good. I shot it so good. Bernie was all over me. This is great. The next morning, we're scrimmaging, and we're running full speed on the floor, and there's a turnover, and I plant and to just plant, stop, and backpedal, and I completely, like, tear, like, not just a
everything,
little
yeah.
hamstring gone on the same leg. So now I'm out till, like, February. So – and then by the time I came back, I didn't. I was tentative. Bernie had kind of lost faith in me a little bit. Yeah. I was shelved. I wasn't playing. And then I had two more years where it was kind of like that. And that was unfortunate that that's how it all ended at the end of that journey. But
it really is. And I appreciate you sharing it. My heart just bleeds for you. I was hurt a lot. But there just comes a point, you know, where you're working, you're rehabbing so much and playing so little.
Yes,
that 100%. the trade-off becomes just and for conscientious players who, you know, you're being paid to do a job and you're being paid well and it's fun. When you can't be out there, it can do a real job on your mind.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, my question, I guess, off of that, you work so hard to get, you know, to that point of getting back and becoming a solid, steady, you know, dependable rotation guy in the NBA. How long after, you know, that hammy and you're done with playing, did you start to begin, you know, sort of working on your second career, which has been going on now for a couple of decades?
Yeah.
When did you start doing that? You're fantastic at it. You've had one job forever and nobody does that. So when did you start doing that?
Well, I appreciate all of that. And it's an interesting story because it certainly isn't what I intended. I finished up my career in Golden State my last year, went out there specifically to play for PJ Carlissimo. This is a 99-2000 season. And he got fired right around Christmas. So early in the year. And he's the reason I went. So now, as to your point, at that time, I'm taking an hour to get ready to practice. Okay. I'm practicing for an hour and a half, and I'm taking 2 hours after to treat my knee. And now the guy I went to play for is gone. So literally I have this epiphany driving to practice out in Oakland. And I literally pulled off the road, pulled into a parking lot somewhere and called my agent and said, I can't do this anymore. Wow. I just can't do this anymore. I'm done. I'm done. This has worn my soul. Has worn it to, you know, just grind it to a stub. Yeah. I said, this is not fun. This is not enjoyable. And I got other things I want to do in my life, but guess what? It wasn't broadcasting. So the first thing I did, cause I didn't know what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
I went home back to the Jersey area, Philly area. And I was like, you know what? First thing I'm going to do, cause I had a couple more years coming from Golden State. Right. So they're going to pay me out over 2 years. I'm like, I got some time here to figure this out. I decided I'm going to go get my master's degree. And instead of just going and getting a normal one, like, you know, most people would do, I'm an idiot. So I decide, no, you know what? I'm going to go to Wharton. So I'm going to try to get into Wharton. And so they're like, I call them up and they're like, we have an executive program every other weekend for 2 years and 100 people let in, 10,000 applicants. They're like, we've already got our class filled, but you're such an interesting background and we want diversity. They only had one other athlete in the history of the program.
Wow.
They said, here's the thing. You got to take the GMAT this week and you have to get this score.
The Rex Chapman Show, powered by Basketball News, is sponsored by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the easy way to play daily fantasy. It's daily fantasy simplified. It's just you versus the projected numbers, Josh. You can pick from two up to five players and an over-under on their projected stats for a single game and win up to 10 times on any entry. Prize Picks is safe and offers fast withdrawals, Josh.
I like the sound of this.
Well, Prize Picks allows mixed sports entries, offering every sport you can think of. Your Prize Picks entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's that easy. You can take the over on Ja Morant's points and the under on Anthony Davis's rebounds if you want. You can receive a match on your deposits up to $100 using our exclusive promo code NEWS. That's promo code NEWS for an instant 100% deposit match on up to $100.
So hold on, price that's pick. Program code NEWS, N-E-W-S, like the news on TV?
That's promo code NEWS for an instant 100% deposit match on up to $100. Guess what else? What? Prize Picks has an award-winning, easy-to-use mobile app available in the App Store and Google Play.
So I go to, I'll never forget this, I go to Barnes & Noble, and I get practice tests on a disc. I pop them in. I take some practice exams. I'm like 200 points short of what they said I had. This is on like Monday. I took 2-3 of those tests a day. By Friday, when it's time to go take the test, because they gave me it, they said, you got to take this test by Friday. I went in, and at that point, I still was probably 100 points off of what they needed. And damn, if that day I didn't get the score by 10 points that I had to have. And next
That's
thing
insane.
I know, here I am. I'm in Wharton, and it starts the following weekend. So now I'm in a room with 100 people of the most accomplished. Because here's the thing. This is the executive program. So all of these people are super accomplished already. They're like, they want to be CEOs one day.
Yeah.
But right now, like one of the guys in my study group, he's the leading heart surgeon at the Bora Heart and Lung Center, but he wants to run the hospital. So he has to get business experience, right? So these are the kind of, one guy was worked at NASA. That's
Tim,
in my
before I forget, before we go, I just want to say, fuck you.
Well, I'll tell you the story because I was thinking this is one of the funniest things that happened that first night. All 100 people had to stand up. They congratulate you. Each person, tell us a little something about yourself. I'm sitting there and these guys are giving the credentials I just mentioned. Now here comes my turn. I stand up and I go, my name's Tim Legler. I spent the last 10 years as a professional basketball player and I have two young children and I have spent most of the day over the last 2 years pretending to be some type of animal for my children. And everybody, the room bust out laughing. I said, so I don't even think I have a business being here right now, but I'm going to give it a shot. And I said, one thing I can promise you, none of y'all are going to outwork me. And anyway, I started laughing. And I sat down, I got through the program. But that was my goal. But right at the end of it, I got a call from ESPN. They had seen some of the interviews I did in Washington with the George Michael machine and Tony Kornheiser. Brought me up for an audition. Believe it or not, this is my 21st season. After that audition, and I'm still, I just signed a new deal in March for 3 years. So hopefully
fantastic,
I'll be
able to go longer.
You're so good at it. You're so good
really
at it.
Are.
Do you obsess? Like what's your preparation? Because you know the game, you know the stuff. You really just have to watch it, but you are a grinder. So you got to grind. I can tell. So what do you do to prep for that kind of stuff?
I think the difference with a guy like me, I'm not a Hall of Famer. So I can't just go out there and be funny. And I can't just go out there and, you know, and people just are interested because I'm a Hall of Famer. So I had to do it different. So I think what sets me apart a little bit is when I watch a game that I'm going to break down, I'm going to take 10, 12 pages of notes on the game. And the reason that's important is because when I find what I want to talk about, the first thing I'm looking for is something that I saw that nobody else is going to talk about. That's the first thing, okay?
A nuance
that mattered in the game. You know what? It might be an 8-0 run in the third quarter that turned it, that no one's going to even show a highlight from that section of the game. So that's the first thing. And then also by doing that, I can now tell the kid that's going to cut my tapes, these are the exact plays I want, rather than handing it off to some kid that's going to cut tape that probably knows basketball. And you just go, hey man, I thought offensive rebounding was a big key tonight. Can you go find me some of that? That's what a lot of people do. Yeah. And now you get a tape and you're watching at home. You're like, well, that's a mediocre breakdown. I give them specific plays for these reasons because I wrote down the time and score in the game. And now that kid can go and boom, he can cut the tape. We're even better now. They got the touchscreen capacity. Yeah. All I have to tell him is, put these three plays together on a tape and then they just hand it to me. And now I do the magic myself with the touchscreen. But I think it's really comes down to the note taking and just desperately trying to find something that's going to educate people tonight about the game that they're not going to hear anywhere else. That's really been my approach from the beginning.
Fantastic.
I can't help but just the hearing your background, hearing you speak. And it's like, it's, inspiring in ways. And so you've had to have thought about or considered coaching. Yes.
100%. And the only reason I didn't go into coaching when I got out of the league, I got divorced right when I retired from the NBA. I was 33. I had a 5 and a 2-year-old that were everything to me. And I was not ready to commit that kind of time. Number one. And two, that means you might have to chase it wherever it takes you all over the country. And they were going to be based in Jersey, Philly. So it was just not a non-starter for me. So that's what broadcasting allowed me, all this freedom to raise them and be an involved and present father, which I was. But what happened now, they got older and I coached a lot of AAU, put a lot of kids in college to play, and I honed my skills, got tied into the recruiting, always thinking one day I'm going to be a Division I coach. I want to run my own program more than anything in the world. My kids got older, got them through. I told my son I was not going to pursue it until he was done college. He graduated a couple years ago. I then started throwing my hat into the ring. And I tell you, man, I'm frustrated because the search firms have really been a roadblock for me because they use the lack of experience as if Rex 30 years associated with the NBA doesn't count for anything, I guess. But the search
firms have got the same, by the way, you have the same, if not more experience than Penny Hardaway does right now. And I love Penny. I played with Penny. Penny coached AAU ball and then got the job at his old school. And you almost got the job at your old school. It kind of ticked me off a bit.
I'm still hurt by it. And honestly, it really, the year before that, actually, I interviewed with Duquesne and I was the second person for that job. Now they hired, in that situation, they hired a guy that had won 20 games at Akron a few times. So I was like, okay. And that's the same area. He had the recruiting base. I met that guy. The AD was really impressed by me, but he said, you know, it's my first hire here. And I understood that one. I did. LaSalle, they haven't been good since I played there. It's coach after coach, year after year of mediocrity. And here I am wanting the job. I went in. I crushed the interview.
You paid them at that point, I'm sure.
Oh, listen. They end up hiring a guy who was number one assistant at Villanova. Ashley Howard sat next to Jay Wright through a national championship run that year. I'm sitting there for 3 weeks watching that like everybody else. So's the LaSalle AD. So they interviewed basically two people, me and him. And I left the interview that day. I got in the car, my wife, I said, you know, there's no way they're not hiring me. I mean, there's just no way. And they hired Ashley. And look, I've known Ashley forever. I'm not denigrating anybody's coaching ability, but here's all I'm going to tell you. You make the conclusion yourself. All right. As we sit here today, those two programs in the Atlantic 10, both of them, a good basketball conference, they are 3-22 combined in the conference this year. They are 13th and 14th in the A-10. And I didn't have enough experience to get that job. But what I try to tell them was, listen, first of all, I had connected myself to recruiting through AAU, but more importantly, you have to be able to talk to a person and understand that this guy just, he sees all 10 at the same time in a way that nobody else can. And I can communicate, I can inspire, I can motivate. I turned myself into a player. I'm going to turn these kids into, like, all things you need. And it just fell on deaf ears because at the end of the day, they're terrified to hire someone that technically has not coached college basketball.
Yeah. Well, I'm betting on Tim Legler if that's what he wants to do.
Rex, you got a lot of pull, man. Come on, Rex.
Right here. We're putting it out there. This man is ready. He's ready. Let's go.
You do still have a run a camp though, right? Tim Legler.
Yeah, I run my camp. It's my favorite week of the year. Tim Legler basketball camps in South Jersey, 20 minutes from Philly, but it's in Jersey. I've run it for 14 years. Very proud of it, man. Wow. And it's every level. It's co-ed. It's every level, and it's literally my favorite week of the year to get to work with these kids. Look, most of those kids are not going to play college basketball. They love the game. And they want to learn the fundamentals. And I've had some good ones come through over the years, but it's just my job is what I tell them the first day. My job is, and every coach I believe this about, my job is when you leave on Friday, you need to love the game a little more than you do right now. And if I didn't do that, then I didn't do my job. And I think the same way about a high school coach, an AAU coach, a college coach, if that guy doesn't hand you off when it's time for you to leave and you love it more than you did the day you got there, the guy did something wrong, in my opinion.
Yeah. Mm. Wow. You know, we were going to I told Josh, the guys, before we came on, I said, Tim and I played against one another. We don't really know each other that well. Maybe we'll just do a lot. We'll go really in depth with, because he's on top of everything NBA. So my point is, we planned on doing that, but we've gone so long because you've been so fucking fascinating that we're not going to even really touch on basketball today. I want you to come back another time to talk about this season. But real quick, who's best team in the West, best team in the East right now?
I think Golden State's going to win the whole thing. And the reason I say that is this. Here's why I say that. They're the one team. Now, listen, who knows what Harden and Embiid ultimately look like? Obviously, that's the most potent combination offensively in the league. So who knows?
Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, Phoenix too. Listen, here's why I say Golden State, Rex. Here's why I say Golden State. If you think about it, they're the only team, when you talk about like contenders, they're the only one that I say, man, think about this now. Klay just got back. Yeah. How much better is Klay Thompson going to be in 2 months? Draymond Green's been out. Wiseman's about to come back. And the other guy that improves every night who is going to be a star in this league is Jonathan Kuminga.
Yeah.
That dude reminds
me. And Jordan Peele.
Jordan Poole.
Poole, yes.
Yeah. No, so I just look at them and I go, wow, it's fascinating. The second best record in the league, and I still feel like there's 20, 30% more out there that they haven't even gotten to yet. And that's why ultimately I'll say to them, but look, am I going to be shocked if the Suns win? Of course not.
Yeah.
And in the East, honestly, if I had today, if I had to go lay money on this, I would probably bet on Milwaukee. But the ultimate ceiling is probably in Philadelphia. If those two guys find the ebb and flow of when to be alpha and they understand, you know, it's going to be some growing pains there, and they're going to pick up somebody at the buyout. If they get Gary Harris, that would be enormous. That could be an unstoppable combination of what they do to you physically every night. I just don't know how you match up with those two guys. So they're an interesting one to look at. But look, if I laid money on it today in Vegas, I'd probably say Phoenix and Milwaukee rematch in the finals.
Wow.
But a month from now, I think Golden State might be looking like they just have too much depth.
Do you think Philly won the trade then?
Philadelphia definitely won the trade for this
really?
Reason. Here's why I say that. They were not winning a championship with Ben Simmons. They were not winning a championship, obviously, this year because he left and he didn't even replace him. This now puts them into a legitimate argument as a title contender. It does. And Brooklyn already was a title contender, and now they still are. So for me, for Philly, they basically went up to the top shelf. They weren't there, and they weren't going to be there no matter what. They weren't getting there. And like I said, I don't even think with Ben Simmons as your starting point guard that was going to happen. So now they are legitimately in that conversation, and that's why, for me, they ultimately won it. They had no choice but to make that deal to bring in a guy like that. Now, look, it might not work, and Harden is fickle. He might flame out in the playoffs like he's done before, get booed by the most rabid fan base known to man, and might – pull one of those Ben Simmons where he's in the shower after the last game of the season saying to himself, man, I can't ever run out there again.
Yeah.
Who knows with Harden? I mean, but in the short term, had to do it.
Do you discount the Nets this year?
I don't, because look, Ben Simmons has value. Right now he's so beat up that
he reminds me of Jason. Young Jason Kidd at 6'10". And look, there were times Jason would tell you, you know, I can think back about playing against Dallas, who Nelly traded Jason, and he would do it. He would try to embarrass him. Like, he wouldn't guard him. I'd come off a pin down and have two guys in my lap. We would cuss Jason, you got to shoot the fucking basketball.
Yeah, right.
You know, he did. He had a thing about it, but you got to get over that thing. I still think Ben Simmons, I mean, he's arguably the best defender in the league. He's high basketball IQ. I hope that he's in a spot with his homeboy Patty Mills and Stevie Nash taking care of him, that and KD hopefully showing some leadership with Kyrie. Hopefully that he can grow up during this time. It obviously didn't work out in Philly. I hate how it went down. But he's one hell of a basketball player. And when you've got arguably the two greatest scorers playing alongside you, how much do you have to shoot?
You know, listen, every point you make is great. And the one thing he's going to do for them, well, multiple things, but one thing that's huge, because even with James, James is not playing with pace. Nothing happens until right. James gets up the floor, right? That's just the way he operates. Ben Simmons creates so much pace that's going to allow role players to walk into naked looks, including, you know, KD and Kyrie, who obviously don't need help to get shots, but they're both great catch and shoot players. So Ben Simmons' initial surge up the floor is something that they've never had. And now these guys all get easier shots. Yeah. I agree with that. He can guard anybody on the floor. I agree with that. That psychological component is fascinating to me, because I think the one thing that people need to understand, that's why I said all along, he's better off not going to a Northeast corridor team. New York, Brooklyn, Boston, Philly, obviously he left, and maybe even Washington to a certain extent, but they're not quite as interested in that team,
right,
in that town. But those other three, because the fans are just, you know, it's just different.
It ruins
their week if you lose. It's not like a lot of cities in this league where it's like, hey, man, that was an entertaining game. Well done, guys. Like, no, it ain't like that in Philly, man. These dudes got to get up tomorrow, and they got to go deliver the Krispy Kreme donuts, man, and they're pissed off because we lost last night, right? So Ben Simmons, whatever that issue was that made him seize up, where he was literally terrified of being an aggressive offensive player, that issue has not been talked about in 8-9 months. It was not addressed. That issue he's going to put in a bag, and he's going to carry it on the train, and he's going to get on the Acela Express, and he's going to ride up to Brooklyn. He's going to get out. He's going to get to his hotel room, and he's going to unpack that bag, and that issue is still in there. That traveled with him. And so that is something. Now, listen, he's got great support with two raw scorers, so he doesn't have to be that initial ball handler that he was in Philly, which was a bad role for him. So I get that. But at the same time, he is going to be on the floor in the last 6 minutes. He is going to have to make important free throws. He is going to have to be – just take the shots that are obvious, which he didn't do at the end of the season last year. So I'm interested to see that. Now, here's the one thing I'll say about this, with this Brooklyn-Philly thing, last thing. And my friends in Philly, all my best friends are all Sixers fans. And they're a bunch of maniacs. And I'm sobering them because they're so giddy over this trade. And I said, listen, here's the one thing you got to remember. And they call me a hater when I say this and all that. I'm just honest. Here's one thing I know for a fact. Brooklyn and Philly now have to go through each other to a certain extent. Here's what I know. KD and Kyrie, they are not running from the light when the pressure's on, okay? James Harden has had some of his worst moments in the biggest games of his career. And Joel Embiid has struggled in playoff games at inopportune times. Now, look, he looks like a different guy this year.
Yeah, he does.
So he's in shape. He's determined. He's grown up. He had a child. I think that helped him mature. He just looks different. So I don't expect him to have like some abominable series or something like that. But I'm just saying, neither one of those guys have proven they can play at that level all the way through the playoffs. KD and Kyrie have. And so that's the one thing I look at. And now James Harden and Embiid have to prove that this year. And if God loves basketball, we're going to get Brooklyn-Philly in a 7-game series, because that's the best rivalry in the NBA overnight when that trade was made.
Mm-hmm. No question.
But can you imagine also just like, God, that series like in the playoffs that were to happen? I mean, Ben Simmons going into Philly those times, it's going to be on has there ever been someone in this kind of, like, I can't think of a franchise or a city that's going to be more vitriol to a guy.
I'm telling you, here's the thing, and I described this to somebody yesterday about this topic, because you think about some of the guys that have gotten it, like LeBron, right, when he came back to Cleveland and they're burning his jerseys in the street, and it was bad that night. A dude ran onto the court the whole bit, all the security. Heat won that game by 30, and that went away basically by the next time he came in. It wasn't anything like that, right? I was at the game in Philly. I'm a Washington football team fan, but I went to an Eagles game. The game T.O. came back as a Cowboy after he left. Remember, he doing the sit-ups in his driveway. Yeah. And he was public enemy number one, came back. That stadium was all over him. By the next time he came in, it had kind of died down. I got news for you. Ben Simmons could play for 30 years in the NBA, and it is never going to die every time he comes into Philadelphia. In fact, and I heard his interview when he said, oh, I'm looking forward to that March 10th game. I said, man, you are not looking forward to that. Don't you sit there and lie. Listen, Rex, if ever a guy has had a case of the stomach flu, it's going to be March 10th at Shoot Around. I'm telling you right now, Ben Simmons, if he has the – listen, now if he's smart, he gets it over with because he might have to go there in the playoffs. He doesn't want to do – but he's thinking to himself, man, if I avoid March 10th, we might not play them in the playoffs. I don't deal with this till next year. So I don't know where his mind is. There's no way. He said your that boy, with a smile on his face. Oh, I'm really looking forward to that. Come on, man.
Your boy, your boys are going to – your Philly boys are going to love you for this. For
they're never going to stop, man. Listen, I'm telling you right now, I listen to local radio here, Sports Hall Radio. They're trying to rally a group of several thousand fans to go up to Brooklyn for his first game in Brooklyn.
Come on.
To buy those seats up. No, this is how I'm telling you, these guys are a different level, man. They're maniacal. They don't forget. They got long memories. And that guy is persona non grata in this town. And him to go to a team that he now has to get through, it's just the irony of it. And he'd have to guard Harden in that series. Think about that. I mean, just you salivate thinking about the drama.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And hey, of all the cities, Philly is the toughest city in this country, I believe. Worked there, shot there for like months and weeks. Every time I'd go get a burger, somebody would knock into me and be like, want to fight? It is a tough, tough
city.
Absolutely,
no doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Tim,
I worry for him.
We're going to let you get out of here, but real quick, what's your favorite movie all time?
Godfather.
Thank you. Thank you. Well done.
Godfather. Hey,
well played.
You want to
tell you what though? I have watched, and my wife just cannot comprehend how many times the movie I've watched the most though over the last couple of years. I don't even know how many times Lone Survivor with Mark Wahlberg.
Yes,
the true story of the Navy SEALs in Afghanistan. Yep. That's my go-to. I could watch that any time of night. How many nights my wife has woken up to gunfire? It like they're coming from the TV.
I bet.
She's like, what are you doing? I said, I'm just trying to relax. She goes, why is this relaxing you? I don't know. Maybe that's I'm a different breed. I don't know.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know. But I'm a very patriotic guy. I'm a very patriotic guy, and that movie gets me, man. And so that's climbed the charts. But Godfather still, to me, that's my all-timer.
Did you read the book, Lone Survivor?
I did read the book.
It's I think, so much – I don't know if the movie's better had you not read that, in my opinion, in some ways, because they had to condense so much. But
and that's also one of the few movies in history that the sequel was just as good. Godfather 2 was just as good.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Lone Survivor, and I was like,
what? I thought you were talking about Godfather.
There's no sequel to that, was there?
well, you know, I don't know how you come up with a sequel instead of Lone Survivor. It's like, oh, next to last survivor. Like, I don't know. Like, there was another dude apparently up in the woods they found. I don't know.
Lone Survivor 2, no survivor.
Right, exactly. No, I was talking about Godfather. No, I did read the book Lone Survivor. Yes, yes.
Yes. Yeah. You could sit down and have dinner with one person alive or dead.
My father. Without question, because my father was so important to me. I lost him at age 25 to lung cancer. I had not really cemented myself in the NBA. I had some 10 days. And the night I won the 3-point shootout, he had passed in 92. That was 1996. And I know for a fact there were several balls that came off my hand that night that were not supposed to go in. And there was a guiding force in the Alamo Dome that night. And it was him. And, you know, he never met my children. And he's just an incredible man. And I know how much he would have loved my kids and how proud he would have been of the career I have. But more importantly, I think the man I am and how I represented what he was as a father to me and try to incorporate that into being a dad. So I would love to be able to just get his perspective on what he's watched over the last 30 years.
That's beautiful.
Beautiful thing, Tim. Tim Legler, you're a good man.
And then front row center for any group, dead or alive or whatever, front row center.
What, to watch?
Yeah.
Yep.
You mean
to go play his guitar group? With him?
Oh, yep. Man. Like AC/DC. My God. There is no question. I've seen AC/DC live 10 times.
Have you really?
Oh, yeah. Angus Young. I don't care how old he gets. I'll be there. It don't. He could be out there in a damn wheelchair playing. And he's still the best damn guitarist I've ever heard. That's a known fact amongst everybody that knows me. Every time and they're still throwing tours together. I can't believe it, but that's the first thing my wife's going to do is scrounge up a couple of tickets. I saw them in the Meadowlands, man, 80,000 people about 6-7 years ago, and it was the most mind-blowing thing I've ever seen. I'm an 80s rock guy, man. That's my genre, and that's my band.
I know we're going to get out of here, but I did want to say, because you say you're not a NBA, you know, all-time legend, so you can't just go out there and make people laugh. But you said a funny Porzingis. What did you say about Porzingis the other day? I said,
you know, some people call Kristaps Porzingis the unicorn because he's unique. And I said, I think he's the unicorn because you never see him. Because he's just hurt all the time. And of course, and Rex, next, listen, man. I mean, am I entitled to have a funny line once in a while? Like,
yes,
but the people, like the vitriol, a lot of people on social media did love that, but also a lot of other people, Legler,
a lot of haters.
Legler, you were hurt a lot as a player. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, come on, man.
Come on.
You know the difference? I'm like, you know the difference? He's a lottery pick. I was an undrafted free agent.
Thank you. Thank you.
A sense of humor, people.
That's it. Lighten up. I don't know. It just hit me in the moment. It got a lot of feedback. It was good, though.
Good. Tim, you got to come back and hang with us.
Hey, listen, I look up to you so much. And
come on, man.
Always did as a player, as a person. And you know, you got a media career going yourself. So anytime you want me from here throughout the rest of the season, break down, you know, games, playoffs, whatever you want, give me a call.
We're taking you up on that.
That's awesome. Yeah. So you'll rue the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, not at all, man. I love talking hoops, man. This was a lot of fun. I love getting off topic too from just the stuff I'm normally talking about. It was good.
Same. Much love, Timmy. Have a great day. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much, man.
Yep.
That was Tim Legler, and man, I could have talked to him for another couple hours, and boy, do I feel like shit after talking to him about myself. I told you.
Yeah, it's a continue. We just have to just rename it the Rex Chapman Podcast with his dipshit friend Josh Hopkins.
Two pieces of shit.
Just as much of a dipshit as Rex is. And they interview smart people. God. No.
Just on a whim, on 3 days' notice, took tests and got into Wharton Business School.
I mean, what a dick. God.
They could have told me, all right, Rex, look, if you can pass this test in 20 years, and I would still be sitting right here.
Oh,
I would never get it. I mean, to have that kind of focus, though, and mindset, and to be like at 33, and you could tell he was just broken, you know, spiritually, emotionally, all of that, going through a divorce now. Physically hurting and searching. And what's he do? Just full bore into something that he never thought ever about and was a success at it. And you see how you could talk to that guy all day. You see why he has a job in TV for the last 20 years and somebody needs to hire him as a basketball coach.
God, that was so obvious. He sounds like a coach. He's inspirational when he's not even trying to be.
You would love to go play for that guy.
Yep. I hope, I don't know if he still wants to, but I hope he does go coach somewhere because he'll be a hell of a coach.
He's one of those guys, they'll hire him in 2 years, they'll be in the tournament, in 4 years, they'll be in the Sweet 16. You know, he's one of those guys that just doesn't fail, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's going to succeed.
That was fun.
Yeah, it was. All right, buddy. Same time next week. Same Bat Channel. Join us for the Rex Chapman Show. This was episode 34 of the Rex Chapman Show with super cool Josh Hopkins. Join us next time here, powered by basketballnews.com.